Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. According to a new report by the Congressional Budget Office, 53 million people in the United States do not have health care. In the year 2022, 8 years after the new health care law is fully implemented, the CBO estimates that 30 million Americans will still be uninsured. So several states around the country are moving towards single-payer health care to ensure that everyone is covered. In May, Vermont became the first state in the country to set a path for single-payer health care when Governor Peter Shumlin signed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act into law. There are also efforts to implement some kind of single-payer system in New Mexico, Maryland, and California. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger twice vetoed a single-payer law, and in January, SB 810, the California Universal Health Care Act, failed on a 19-15 vote after four Democrats abstained and one voted no. Not one Republican voted for the bill. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about single-payer health care. What worked in Vermont, and what lessons can we learn from other states? In 1999, Dr. Deb Richter moved to Vermont to work on single-payer. As chair of Vermont Healthcare for All, she gave 500 talks around the state, met with state legislators, talked to skeptics, and 12 years later, she was present when Governor Shumlin signed the bill into law. Dr. Deb Richter is president of Vermont Healthcare for All. She practices family medicine in Montpelier, Vermont. She's past president of Physicians for a National Health Program, and she joins us from Montpelier. Hi, Dr. Richter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. And we're also joined by Dr. Bill Skeen. He's executive director of Physicians for a National Health Program here in California, and Dr. Skeen joins us from Southern California. Hi, Dr. Skeen. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
It's great to have you. So, Dr. Richter, let's start off with you. Before we talk about Vermont, what are the limits around single-payer based on the health care bill? What can you maybe not do based on the passage of the health care bill?
You're talking about the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to. We wanted to take an immediate path to single-payer. At least our governor and legislature and majority of Vermonters did. But unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act prohibits us from applying for the waivers that will be necessary for us to finance some of our health plan until 2017. So that is really one of the major limits at this point that will keep us from going forward.
So does that mean it would make it difficult for any state to pass single payer or to implement single payer until 2017?
That is correct. But you can do what our state is planning on doing. In fact, we've already set in motion, and we have at least the stewardship beginning, which we have a Green Mountain Care Board. It consists of five members, and they're initially charged with helping to control costs in healthcare and work on hospital budgets and setting insurance rates. Those are things that we've done initially, and they will eventually assume stewardship of the healthcare system in general. So that is something that can be done. There's also ways of simplifying insurance payments and making them sort of more like an all-payer rate. So there are some things that states can do, but to do a true single payer that is publicly financed, available to all in your state, that is something that cannot be done until 2017.
And your program is called Green Mountain Care.
Correct.
Okay. Dr. Skeen, how did this provision get into the Affordable Care Act, the 2017 provision? Do you know?
I actually don't know the exact mechanism of how it was proposed and how it was incorporated. Perhaps Deb knows that.
What my understanding was that actually there were some more liberal senators that were worried that some states might take advantage of allowing for pilots by doing less than the Affordable Care Act wanted, and that they were worried that would happen, so wanted to mandate that all states comply until 2017. That was my understanding from speaking with some people in D.C.,
And Dr. Skeen, before we talk about Vermont and other states, is there anything else we need to know about how the Affordable Care Act would affect single payer?
The 2017 waiver of state innovation is really, I think, the largest concern for those of us that are working towards single payer. I think the good news is that the administration has already said that single payer is certainly an option that states could experiment after that waiver becomes available.
All right. So, Dr. Richter, you moved to Vermont in 1999 to work on single payer. And we should note that we're talking today about what we can learn from other states. And I think about the population of our state versus your state. I mean, we're talking, what, 34 million in California? And you've got about, what, 600,000, which is actually a little smaller than San Francisco. So what was the process like for you over the last 12 years?
It was a really incredible learning process for me because I want to say that I've sometimes been credited with a good deal of the change that's happened here, and that really is, none of this change could have happened without some major players that we've had, and one being Senator Bernie Sanders, who has been championing this issue for the last 25 years. He's been running around the state talking about single payer. But the other was our governor, Peter Shumlin, who continues to be spearheading this issue and saying that he would immediately want single payer if we could do it. So we've had many activists for years before I even arrived in Vermont that were working on the issue. And so this has really been an effort on the part of many, many people in Vermont. And we also have a very strong democratically controlled legislature that have been very effective at moving this issue too. But what I found actually was that if we're going to move this issue forward, I think what we need to do is recognize that not everybody is of the same mindset, and I think, but we all have, in a sense, there is a selfish interest on the part of everyone for making sure that health care reform, and I think it's, in my view, I found after spending many times and many talks in Vermont, that was to focus on the things that matter to individuals, and rather than sort of more of the, I'd say more altruistic side of folks, because that isn't always what moves people. And I found that focusing more on the cost issue was something that what appealed to many more people who were fence sitters. And so that was sort of one of the main things I learned over the years.
And Dr. Skeen, what really strikes you about what's happened in Vermont? I'm sure you've been watching it closely.
Oh, yes, of course. We're all here in California. We're all very inspired by what Vermont has done. Vermont is absolutely leading the nation in terms of making single payer a reality. And so we watch their process very closely. I think that in Vermont in particular, the political situation was able to align, which helped. And then the tremendous amount of work that Deb and others did in organizing the grassroots created an atmosphere that it was possible. And we believe here in California that we could be the second state to move towards single payer as well.
Well, and before we talk about what's happening in California, Dr. Richter, you just mentioned some skeptics. You said that cost tended to work with skeptics. Can you just give us a sense of what those conversations sounded like, especially maybe Republican skeptics?
Well, and I think, and then we must remember in Vermont, a Republican here is a much more reasonable being, I found that addressing the business community was especially important, because I think the business community understood, like, if we made a business plan for healthcare and sort of gave a business plan for the entire healthcare system, it would look a lot like a single payer system, because what you would do is try to bring along efficiencies. Making uniform coverage makes perfect sense, and when you think about uniformity in business, of course, that makes perfect sense. Setting a budget makes perfect sense to a business person. And making sure that you're including all the things that are going to affect your outcome. And certainly including everyone makes much more sense. And I think when you look at it in terms of would a business spend 31 cents of every dollar on administrative overhead, and I think most businesses would accept the fact that they'd be out of business in short order if they did that. So I think if you can apply some of those principles, and the fact that most healthcare costs are fixed, meaning that they exist, they're not created by the patient. So the idea of running around after patients to keep them from getting care doesn't really make sense, because the care is what's costing us. In other words, your emergency room is there whether people are using it or not, and the costs are there. And so I found that using those analogies were much more effective. I would also use the analogy of our roads and bridges. that we very few of us are using them at any one time, but we want to make sure they're there. And if we want to make sure they're there, we have to pay for them. And that argument actually worked very well with the business community. And I found that they were very reasonable, and that if we took this away from it being about providing for the uninsured, which, again, I think a lot of people really care about, but they don't feel it's their problem to solve, but making sure that a hospital is there for maybe their son or daughter or mother or father is very important to them, and yet we don't want to pay for more than our population would need. So those are the principles that I found were very effective with the business community and the fence sitters, and many of them were nodding their heads at the end of the Rotary talks or the Chamber of Commerce talks and things like that.
And Dr. Skeen, what have you learned from what's worked in Vermont?
Well, I think the general inspiration that single payer is possible. I do think that the way that they've gone about it is probably going to be in California that we'll have to take a different approach. Our political situation, our legislative situation is different. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would be possible, for instance, for us at the moment to pass the legislation that would be very similar that Vermont did, that sets up the roadmap to single payer. Because of their history and what they've already done in terms of healthcare reform, I think it was a very specific solution for Vermont. I think our path will have the same end goals, but we'll take a somewhat different course legislatively and politically.
Well, we have a related question from a caller, but before we take Ruth Ann and El Cerrito, I just want to give out the phone number. We're speaking today with Dr. Bill Skeen, Executive Director for Physicians for a National Health Program, California. Dr. Deb Richter is President of Vermont Healthcare for All. In May, Vermont became the first state in the nation to set a path for single payer when Governor Peter Shumlin signed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act into law. There are also efforts underway in New Mexico and Maryland. In fact, in Maryland, they just came out with a lengthy report about the cost of single payer, specifically looking at the administrative costs. And we're talking today about what we can learn from other states that are on the road to single payer. What questions do you have if you're involved in these efforts? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And maybe you're a skeptic. Deb Richter was on the road for many, many years talking to skeptics about single payer. We'd love to hear from you. What concerns do you have about this and how it would work? You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Ruth Ann and El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi there, Rose. Thank you very much for doing this show. You know I think it's incredibly pertinent. I had two questions. One I think you were expecting and one that came up in the prior spot you were talking about. The one that came up previously is I'm interested in when Dr. Richter was talking about, you know, holding back costs, and it sounded to me like it was campaigning on doing some healthcare rationing. And I would like to see the argument go more towards restraining costs on just the enormous costs that are involved in healthcare in the United States compared to every other industrialized country in the world. And I was just concerned on the discrepancy I heard there. My second question.
Well, why don't we take that one first?
Okay, though. Thanks, Rosa.
Sure. Dr. Richter, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. I think Ruth Ann makes a really good point that, and I must say that when I talk about focusing on costs, I think one of the major points to be made is that we have more than enough money in the system, currently circulating in the system, to pay for more benefits than anybody could possibly need. That includes all that Americans need, and we certainly know in Vermont that it's more than Vermonters need. We're wasting an enormous amount of money on administrative costs. In other words, chasing the money. The providers have to have an army of people in the billing office just to collect the money to keep their doors open. Whereas if those payments are guaranteed, those people are really not needed. There's also, on the payer end, there's enormous bureaucracy to try to keep from paying any of those bills, and that's on the payer's part. So if you add all that up, we're wasting on a national level about $400 billion a year on unnecessary administrative costs, which could be put towards medical care, which is currently being denied to many people. But in addition to that is that we definitely are paying higher prices for the medical care that we're getting in this country and need not be paying the higher prices that we're paying. These are sort of the effective ways that other countries are able to spend half of what we spend per person. Are basically, because they spend less on administrative costs, they set prices and negotiate prices with the providers of their care. They have drug formularies. They have a much larger primary care infrastructure, which we know decreases costs. So there's many things that we can do to decrease costs. But I think the idea that we need to do rationing, I think it depends on what I really look at when I would, you know, just define that word. I think it's really formally defined as the egalitarian distribution of scarce resources. And certainly we do not have scarce resources. So we need not cut back on necessary medical care for Americans. And in this case, I would describe that to Vermonters.
And Dr. Skeen, what would you add to that? A number of reports that have focused on what's happening in Vermont have asked this question prominently in the pieces, and that is, what can be cut without sacrificing quality?
Yeah, well, I think we have to remember, I think many Americans are under the incorrect perception that that all of us in this country can get medical care when we actually need it. And when we talk about rationing, maybe we look at other systems where perhaps there's some waiting lines in other countries. But we're not necessarily conscious of the fact that in this country we ration as well. We do it on the ability to pay, and we leave it to the private health insurance companies to decide how to ration. So as you mentioned at the beginning of your show, the private health insurance industry has rationed 53 million Americans out of care. Those people don't even get a chance to wait in line. So rationing does happen in this country. It happens in a way that's grossly unfair. And as Deb noted, since we spend twice as much, the money's already in the system, we spend twice as much on health care as any other country. So if we were to recoup that $400 billion that Dr. Richter was referring to earlier, we could bring everyone into the system without the need to ration medically necessary treatment.
The $400 billion in admin costs.
Correct.
Why doesn't that get more attention? I rarely hear that mentioned. And in fact, I've been reading so much about what's going on in Vermont and just around the country. It's hardly mentioned in any article.
Well, you have to remember what that $400 billion constitutes. You're talking about a very, very well-funded opposition, which is the middleman, which isn't under a single-payer system. The middleman, which that would be the insurance industry, are not needed. What we need is a source of financing for the healthcare services, and we need healthcare services available. We do not need a middleman. We do not need this unnecessary billing clerks for collecting money, because the money would be guaranteed to the providers. So those things would not be needed. So when you think about that, these are very, very politically connected people who are going to be shut out of a single-payer system because they're not needed. So I think that's probably why you're not hearing about it. This has been reported again and again, and found Physicians for National Health Program, Dr. David Himmelstein and Steffi Wohlhandler have done extensive research, which has been in peer-reviewed journals a number of times, and found that this number just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the amount that we could potentially save if we had a more efficient, administratively efficient healthcare system.
And Ruth Ann, did we answer your first question?
Very much so. I would just like to interject before I even get to my second question.
Thanks
a lot. Is that I prefer to call the middle men, shall we say, intermediaries. And as a person under 65 with Medicare, I can attest from personal experience what a delight it is to have such a easy system to use in a comprehensive system, which is why I want to see it be extended to everyone.
Well, we're actually doing a show about Medicare next Thursday, and Dr. Richter, and just a second, Ruth Ann, I just want to get this out there because I think it's important. I read that Medicare, it's about 1% goes to administrative compared to, say, 15%.
That's
with most.
Why it's such a delight to have.
Does that sound about right?
Actually, it's the estimates that I have read are about 2.5 to 3%, I believe, compared to 15% on the private insurance end.
Okay.
Yes.
I've read those too, Dr. Richter.
Yes.
That's exactly the figures I was working with. My second question was going to be to either Dr. Skeen, or actually both Dr. Richter and Dr. Skeen, is working on SB 810 in California, because I do think working through the states is the way to go, I'm curious what your thoughts are on how, or maybe why Vermont was so much more successful, because Governor Shumlin was rah-rah-rah, a single payer from the get-go, and Governor Brown has been very silent and refused to take a position, even though Schwarzenegger did not sign it both times, and people were very hopeful that when it got to Governor Brown, who spoke in favor of it way before he was elected governor, would come to the fore for us, and he has been silent. And I'm curious about the discrepancy. Your thoughts on the possible success of 810 going forward, given the success in Vermont, and how much of that may lay with how enthusiastic Governor Shumlin was for the bill.
Well, I can say that, yes, I think one of the major factors for us was the fact that Governor Shumlin was so enthusiastic. And because we had actually passed the single-payer bill, I think, in the same year that you did, in 2005, and we had a Republican governor who vetoed it, and we had a very similar situation. So I think that we had all of our stars lining up at the right time. We had very strong leadership in our in the House and the Senate, and the combination of that plus Senator Sanders and all of those things happening at the same time, I think that's really what did it for us.
And Dr. Skeen, what are your thoughts on this? Because it's interesting to look at what happened under Schwarzenegger. SB 810 passed twice. He vetoed it. And then under Jerry Brown, it failed on a 19-15 vote. After four Democrats abstained, these Democrats voted for it under Schwarzenegger and didn't vote for it under Brown. Why is that?
Well, I would make several points about that. First of all, we have, as you say, to put a bill on the governor's desk. So we haven't actually had a chance to see if he would sign it or not. So the challenge remains for us. SB 810, of course, will be reintroduced in the next session of the legislature in February of 2013, which will give us another opportunity to see if we can move it through the legislature and get it to Jerry Brown. And let's see, I had one more point about that, which at the moment I just forgot.
Well, so I just want to mention, so we're talking Senator Alex Padilla, Senator Juan Vargas, Senator Michael Rubio, and Senator Rod Wright. They all voted for it under Schwarzenegger, but not under Brown. What I've heard from some single-payer advocates is they're afraid that Brown might actually sign it. That's why they didn't vote for it. Have you been hearing this, and do you agree with that?
I haven't heard it, and I don't really think I agree with it. I think what's going on in Sacramento this past year and probably in other state capitals is our legislators have been very much laser-focused on implementing the Affordable Care Act. This, of course, is the signature legislation of the Obama administration, and this is an election year. So I think our California, which has a largely Democratic majority in both houses, I think they want to make sure that they take all steps as rapidly as possible to implement the Affordable Care Act and to show support for this important piece of legislation from the Obama administration. And the corollary of that is that I also think in this past legislative session, it's been a little bit difficult to get them to listen to the single-payer message at the same time. Of course, single-payer is continued health reform. It would take us where we need to go and actually achieve universal coverage. And I think, you know, many of our legislators support the concept.
And we're gonna take just a quick break. We're talking today about what we can learn from other states that are working on and implementing single-payer. We'll also ask our guests to define single-payer versus universal health care after the break. And you can join us, 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
It's easier than ever to listen to local public radio online. You can find KALW's MP3 stream on iTunes, and if you have an iPhone, you can also find us on the new Public Radio Tuner. It's all free, and the details are at KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation about the future of NASA and space exploration, and we'd love to hear from you. What do you want from the future of space exploration? And then on Thursday, we'll be talking about the state of the electric grid here in the United States. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about single-payer health care. According to a new report from the Congressional Budget Office, 53 million people in the U.S. do not have health care. And then in 2022, 8 years after the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented, 30 million Americans will still be uninsured. Single-payer advocates have been working nonstop to try to get single-payer passed at the state level. They've been successful in Vermont. In May, they became the first state in the nation to set a path for single-payer. There are also efforts underway in New Mexico, Maryland, and here in California. So we're talking today about what we can learn from other states. What questions do you have about how this would actually work? 866-798-8255. If you have any concerns about it, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Dr. Bill Skeen, Executive Director for Physicians for a National Health Program in California, and Dr. Deb Richter is President of Vermont Healthcare for All. She practices family medicine in Montpelier, Vermont. And can you both just define for us, define single payer and how it differs from universal health care, Dr. Skeen?
Sure. Universal health care, of course, is just a term that means that everyone has health care. Single payer is a healthcare financing system that could achieve universal healthcare for everyone. We use that term. It's kind of a health economic term, not necessarily readily understood by everyone, but it just simply refers to, for instance, if you wanted to use Medicare as an example of something similar to a single payer system, basically people pay taxes into Social Security and the Medicare system, and then when they turn 65, Medicare provides them with health insurance. So Medicare is an agency. It's the sole source of payment for medical care for seniors over 65, and so they're the single payer. Deb, did you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, I would just, you know, I think Medicare is actually the best example, but what we're talking about is Medicare for All. And instead of at 65, you would receive it at birth. We would pay for it through taxes, and everyone would pay in based on their ability, based on their income. And it would eliminate premiums. I think that's an important thing for us to recognize, is right now many of us are faced with huge copays, huge deductibles, enormous premiums, and that's at the expense of increased wages. And we certainly don't have any kind of health security. I think most people, many Americans, are now worried of losing that. They stay in jobs they don't like. So all of these things would actually change under a Medicare for All type system. And the other thing I'd like to point out is that we often hear, how can we afford it? We really can't afford not to do this. Right now, the healthcare is the leading problem in our economy, and it is adversely affecting our ability to buy things in our economy. Right now, the way we finance healthcare is very unfair. So middle class and poor people pay a much higher percentage of their income to health care than those of higher means, and that is definitely affecting our economy. So this would be a huge economic engine if we change the way we finance health care and did it in a tax-based way rather than based on premiums, and we could decrease costs over time. So I think these are a bunch of things that people need to understand, that it's a Medicare for All. You get a card. You go to your doctor, you get care. You go to your hospital, you get care. You don't receive a bill. And this would be guaranteed at the point of service, and people would pay based on their income.
And Dr. Richter, did you find that going door-to-door and talking to skeptics in Vermont, did Medicare for All stick with people more than single-payer? Because that was
Absolutely.
One of the criticisms,
yes.
That most people don't know what single-payer is.
I agree. And the only reason we use the term in Vermont, I agree, and I think it's probably not the best term for us to use, but the reason we continued to use it in Vermont was because our governor when he was running for in the gubernatorial race, he actually in the primary had single payer ads where he talked about a single payer system in a minute or less. He talked about how wonderful this would be, and was able to explain it. And Bernie Sanders has been running around talking about a single payer system for the last 20 years. Single payer,
right?
So we've been hearing about single payer for years.
Well, we've got a number of questions from listeners, so let's hear. And thank you again, Ruthann, for calling. Let's hear from Andrea in Santa Cruz. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Rose. How you doing, sweetheart?
Good, thank you.
You know, first, I think it's fair to say that I think that, you know, if the top, you know, 1%, I mean, if they were even just taxed maybe 1% to 2%, that would help a lot of things. But one thing that I don't really hear much talked about is not just the financial part of the healthcare system, but the other part of it. You know, I think it's also fair to say that we are a very big pill-popping healthcare country. Mm. And, you know, I've been disabled for many years, and, you know, I mean, I get like 450 Dilaudids a month, plus, you know, 60 oxycodones a month, and, you know, I'll probably be on opiates the rest of my life. And, you know, if there could be some money that would go for, like, things like maybe some, you know, deep massage therapy, chiropractic therapy, maybe being able to sit in a hot tub a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's healthier ways to handle certain, you know, a lot of conditions, actually, and not just physical, but I think mental, too, because, you know, if you go to, like, you know, the psychiatric building in Santa Cruz, and you see a psychiatrist, the first thing they do is they whip out their, you know, prescription pad. It's like, okay, what antidepressant would you like to try? Well, I've tried about 15 different ones of them, and I'll tell you, I've gotten bad side effects from just about all of them. And I don't really hear much of that talked about.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Andrea. It's a great point. We did a show a couple months ago about wellness and what that really means. But mm-hmm. we should do another one because you're right. We're talking so much about the cost, and it'd be nice to drill down to talk about what part of the system actually needs to change. And before we get to your question, let's just take Gina, who's got a related question, and then we'll get responses. Hi, Gina. Welcome to the show.
Well, that is related. Thank you. I'm all for single payer, universal health care, whatever you want to call it. Very strongly I am for that. However, a lot of us pay out of pocket now for holistic health care. And I'm really, that's my bent, that getting to the roots of things rather than dealing with symptoms all the time like the allopathic doctors do. So, the AMA is very rigid about letting in alternative practitioners into the marketplace, shall we say. And I'm tired of that, you know, all that rigidity. So it leaves them out. They want to get in. But, so who's addressing the root causes of things?
Well, thank you for the questions. Dr. Richter, how would you address these concerns?
I would address them by saying that there are many ways that we could reduce the cost of health care. And the first point is the administrative cost. But the other side of it, I think the Andrea and Gina brought up good points that on the side of prevention, on the side of more primary care. And when you look at other countries that do public financing, what they look at is they're looking at the entire population. And when the public is financing something, they're more looking at, okay, how can we more effectively get more health care for our dollar? And one of the major ways, obviously, is prevention. Secondly is primary care. And there are alternative methods of providing care, alternative medicine, that is much more effective than allopathic. But I think it needs to be evidence-based. That certainly would be a requirement. But you look at countries like Germany. They have a lot of alternative medicine in Germany many of the other countries that publicly finance. So I think these are all things that would come with a public-financed healthcare system that included everyone and looked at the needs of the whole population. We would look at these other ways. The problem right now is there really isn't anyone with a special interest in keeping costs down, because when you look at private insurance, people only keep the same insurance for several years. So prevention really doesn't mean a lot to them. It would under a publicly financed from birth to death healthcare system, because that certainly would be an interest for the public.
And Dr. Skeen, do you have anything to add there?
Well, I would just say that the legislation that finally implements a Medicare for All kind of system, for instance, SB 810 in California, does spell out a very comprehensive list of benefits. It includes vision, dental, mental health care on the national level. It would even include long-term care. And so that legislation, you know, will have an opportunity for input from the community in terms of what benefits they'd like to see.
So this would also include dental and vision?
Yes.
Okay, because that's fascinating, because dentists have said that when the Affordable Care Act was up for debate, they went to Washington and said, here's our plan for dental, and the White House basically told them that dental's off the table, and we didn't even hear about dental and vision during the debates.
Yes, well, in California and the national on the national level as well, we intend when we move to improve Medicare for All to have a very comprehensive benefits package that covers all those things.
And so how would this affect the system itself? Because we've done shows before with general medicine doctors who are basically saying they're leaving because they're so overwhelmed. And they say that if people flood the system and take advantage, it would be completely overwhelmed because the infrastructure is just not there. And, you know, for example, I had a friend who had a pinched nerve, really bad pain in her head. She was so scared, she called her doctor. The doctor basically said, I can see you in 3 weeks, go to the emergency room. And she said, I have insurance, why can't I see you? She sent her to the emergency room. So there are clearly major, major problems just with the system as it is. How would we go through that? I mean, it seems like there'd be a huge learning curve or lots of kinks to iron out once these programs were implemented.
I can address that. First of all, we're vastly underfunding primary care right now, which is why many medical students don't choose to go into primary care, because they have loans, oftentimes $150,000 to $200,000 in loan repayments. And if it's a less well-financed specialty, most of them are going to say, look, I can't pay back my loans. So certainly we could take this. This would have to be something, I think, taken care of at a much more of a national level. But even at a state level, if you increase the financing of primary care, you would have many more. We know that we had a survey done where 200 doctors were willing to move to Vermont, which our current need in terms of primary care was only an additional 60 doctors. So we already know that a single-payer system is much more attractive to the primary care field. The other thing is when you simplify the administration, so much of a doctor's day is spent dealing with the paperwork. And if you simplify that and don't have all of these hoops that doctors have to jump through, you increase their ability to take care of more patients. So that would be an immediate effect of them doing that, but certainly drawing more of the patients or more of the doctors to the primary care field, and also the use of nurse practitioners and physician's assistants who are highly qualified to deliver primary care also.
And that is Dr. Deb Richter, president of Vermont Healthcare for All. In May, Vermont became the first state in the nation to set a path for single payer when Governor Peter Shumlin signed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. We're also speaking with Dr. Bill Skeen, executive director for Physicians for a National Health Program here in California. In January, SB 810, the California Universal Healthcare Act, failed on a 19-15 vote. After four Democrats abstained, under Schwarzenegger, they voted for it. Schwarzenegger vetoed the single-payer law twice. And this time around, not one Republican voted for the bill. So we're talking about single-payer, what we can learn from other states, how plans would differ around the country. What questions do you have about single-payer if you work in the healthcare field, if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse? What do you think about the system that we have now, how it'll change under the Affordable Health Care Act, and then how it might change under single payer? So what are your thoughts and concerns? What changes would you like to see? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have a number of questions from listeners via email. Armand writes, what is the difference between Vermont's health care plan and the one that Mitt Romney signed when he was governor of Massachusetts? Dr. Richter, can you answer that?
Well, the one that Mitt Romney signed was actually more like the Affordable Care Act is right now. And that, again, is based on an individual mandate where people are forced to buy health insurance. And there is some subsidy for the insurance, but certainly not to make it affordable for the majority of people in Massachusetts. And that is vastly different than a publicly financed healthcare system that essentially funds care rather than insurance. So you don't really need insurance any longer. You're basically guaranteed coverage just like Medicare. So again, this would be sort of like a Medicare for all versus what we have right now in the form of the Affordable Care Act. So there are major differences.
All right. Thank you for the email, Armand. And Art writes, Dr. Skeen, there was a study in California that clearly laid out the economic savings to the state and individuals of implementing single payer a couple of years ago. Is there a new study being done?
I think you're referring to the Lewin Group report from about 2005. At this point, we definitely will need a new study when we get to the point where Vermont is. As you listeners probably know, Vermont commissioned a study done by Dr. William Shao, which also analyzed what the benefits to the state would be if they moved to a single-payer system. In California, we believe that when we get to that stage as well, when we're on the verge of passing the legislation, a study will be very helpful. However, we know already there's been more than 35 studies done across the country on the benefits of single-payer, and every single one of them shows that a single-payer system is the only system that's able to control costs and save money for all of us.
And he also wants to know, is there an opportunity in the current presidential campaign to raise consciousness about single payer? Or do you think that this will even come up?
I think it's always a good idea for the people at the grassroots level, for all of us to be raising the issue all the time and pointing out that single payer is the solution.
All right. Well, thank you for the emails, Art. And we'll address your question about Medicare next Thursday when we do that show. And let's go back to phone calls. Let's hear from Christina in Marin County. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious during back in the national debate of the proposed Obama Affordable Care Act that you didn't hear much about tort reform regarding doctors' malpractice insurance and the high expense that's caused by numerous lawsuits that are pursued. And I was curious where that debate is in these state issues.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Skeen, in case you couldn't hear, where does tort reform fit into the dialogue about single payer?
Well, when we say tort reform, of course, we're referring to malpractice costs, which are exorbitant in this country for many physicians. Under a single-payer system, of course, everyone would have health insurance guaranteed for life. So, for instance, if there was a malpractice case that went forward, there would be no need to include charges or damages for lifetime medical care since everybody already gets it. So that simple fact would reduce medical malpractice premiums for people in this country. Other countries physicians pay tremendously less, and there are other factors that factor into that as well. But just the simple fact that everyone would have health care for life would help tremendously reduce medical malpractice.
And Dr. Richter, did this come up in Vermont?
Yes, it did, and even though we actually have a very low rate of litigation, there is no doubt that doctors still fear getting sued, and there are some costs that are incurred as a result of that, some unnecessary tests and such. But there are also ways, I think doctors use that a lot to sort of explain away things. I think, you know, we do know that a doctor's good bedside manner goes a long way towards preventing lawsuits, and I think that's actually one of the reasons we have a low rate in Vermont is that there seems to be a much stronger medical ethic here as far as we treat first and ask questions later, for example, about health insurance, and there's more continuity of care in terms of the primary care. So those sorts of things. There's no doubt we need a fix to the medical malpractice in this country. I think that's going to have to be done at a national level. I really don't believe that at the state level that's going to be something that we're going to be able to handle that will bring down costs anytime soon.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Christina. And let's hear next from Trevor in Moss Landing. Hi, Trevor. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I just wanted to know what the opposition stance was as far as you know, the Republicans, what they think about the benefits of not implementing universal health care.
Specifically in California?
No, in general.
Well, I mean, you could argue it's not just Republicans. I mean, four Democrats abstained, and the single-payer advocates didn't get a seat at the table during the Affordable Care Act debate. What would you say about that, Dr. Skeen, major opposition and the reasoning behind it?
Well, I think it's pretty clear over the last few years that the Republican Party has emerged as true believers that the that our private market can solve every issue that comes up. I think we've seen in the case of healthcare that the private insurance industry has not found a way to include those 53 million Americans that are without health insurance. So the private market doesn't pardon me. The private market doesn't solve every solution.
And Dr. Richter?
Well, I think we also have to remember that those people that would lose under a single-payer system and Medicare for All would be the insurance industry. The drug industry fears this, and they contribute a great deal to political campaigns. And I think that is sort of that's a major factor as to why we haven't had change. If you ask somebody what makes the most sense, and you were just asking them independently of a campaign, most legislators, I think most Republicans would agree that this is a better way to go. This makes more sense. People will have more freedom. People will have more security. Costs will be lower. This is more efficient. We will be able to cover more people for more services. I think most people recognize that, but you have to remember that, you know, their reelection depends on them raising money, and that is one of the major factors.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Trevor. Let's try to get to a few more calls before we end. Let's hear from Rudy in Salinas. Hi, Rudy.
Hello. Yes, I just had a question because a few times that I went to Hawaii and people that I met there, they talked about the healthcare system they have there. I was wondering what's the difference between the healthcare system in Hawaii and what they're using in Vermont.
What I don't know anything about the Hawaii healthcare system. What was your experience like?
From the way I understood it and from the individuals I talked to, it's basically 100% open to all the public, but I wasn't sure if that was to the native residents of Hawaii or if it applied to all Hawaiian citizens.
Dr. Skeen or Dr. Richter, do you know anything about what's happening in Hawaii?
What I understand is that, first of all, Hawaii had sort of a pay-or-play kind of model where they got an ERISA waiver, and that's like a complicated that prevents states from having this kind of thing where you would have to either pay for insurance or pay for a tax. So employers had to do this, and I believe that was back in the 80s, maybe the 70s or 80s, and they were able to do this, which set sort of more of a strong push for people being included. However, they still have a certain percent. I think it's probably about 10% of their population is still uninsured. But it's less of a problem, just I think as it is in the state of Vermont. Right now, our rate of uninsured is about 10%. So their healthcare system needs fixing also, and they're working on it, actually. They're working towards looking into a single-payer system and doing something very similar to what Vermont has done.
All right. Well, thank you, Rudy. We'll maybe find an article and put it at yourcallradio.org. And we have one more caller. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Hello. First of all, a couple of political comments. I'm going to turn my radio down. I'm stunned, actually, to hear what I heard today, because this is the first time I heard it, that 2017 is the date that states would be able to move closer mm-hmm. if they want to a single payer or universal health care. That really shocked me. I didn't know that was in the Affordable Care Act. Secondly, just a political comment about California. Those four Democrats, I hate to disagree with your doctor on the show. I think it was political expediency. They supported it for how many years and then turn around and vote it when Brown gets in. That's our best. That would have been maybe our best chance. But I wanted to ask two other questions, medical questions. One is, I don't know what's in SB 10. I'm going to have to investigate. But I'd like to know what steps, since we can't get the single payer, what now? What steps could be taken sort of incrementally, if you will, to move towards single payer, so that when 2017 does arrive, if some of us are still alive, that there may be a chance to move in that direction.
All right. Well, it's SB 810. Dr.
Sorry,
Skeen.
810.
Yeah, that's okay. And we've got info on our website. Dr. Skeen?
Well, I would say that 2017, the number does sound like a ways off, but actually it's less than 5 years. And I think in those next 4.5 years or so here in California, there's quite a bit that we can do to prepare California to be the next state to go to single payer. I think the biggest thing we need to do is kind of what we're doing here today. We need to get out and educate the public and make sure that they understand what single payer is. There are many misconceptions about healthcare reform. I think we saw quite a dearth of facts coming from the opposition, and perhaps even some misinformation that has confused people about what healthcare reform means and what single payer would do in the state. The move to single payer in terms in terms of steps, we have to realize that the current system that we have for people less than 65 in this country involves purchasing private insurance, where with the Medicare for All system, there would be no role for private insurers. So it's a change in our system, probably it's a change that we need to move to all at once. When Medicare was passed back in 1965, the implementation occurred over the course of only 1 year, and was highly successful. After the implementation of Medicare, the insurance rates among seniors were 49%. They went to 100%. The poverty level among seniors was 30%, which dropped to 7.5%. So the implementation of Medicare was highly successful and occurred in 1 year, and basically just moved to the new system immediately.
And again, we're talking about that next Thursday. And final thoughts from you, Dr. Richter?
Well, I think also things that we could do sort of in an incremental, what I'd call sort of a systemic incremental, is considering paying for a sector of care for everyone through public financing, which would sort of get your system started. Looking at sort of having a board similar to what we have in Vermont, and considering paying, for example, primary care for everyone, and paying for with a small payroll tax. There are ways, and that certainly would get the system started. And you know, there's some talk about something of that nature in Vermont also.
Well,
and the thing is, you have to pass legislation before 2017 to get the ball rolling.
And we'll definitely continue following this. Dr. Deb Richter is president of Vermont Healthcare for All, and Dr. Bill Skeen is executive director for Physicians for a National Health Program in California. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your emails and phone calls. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's the status of space exploration? On the next Your Call, in light of NASA's historic landing of the $2.5 billion Curiosity rover on Mars, we'll talk about space. A planning group is taking a look at how the agency will continue exploring Mars beyond the missions operating today. So who decides where we explore? What missions are we not hearing about? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What role do you think NASA should play in the future? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you.